Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this episode of My First Sketch at MyFirstSketch.com. I'm Josh Heilm. Any questions, thoughts, recommendations, feel free to email me at josh@myfirstsketch.com. Like the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/myfirstsketch. It'd be really cool if you rate it 5 stars and leave a review on whatever platform you get the podcast. So this is the last time I'll talk to you all before the live and in-person Sketchybator this Sunday, May 7th at 2 p.m. at Tattooed Mom on South Street here in Philadelphia. It's a sketch comedy open mic, so bring your sketches and we'll do some readings, have some drinks, and some fried chicken sandwiches. At least that's my plan. Sketchybator.com for more information. Elsewhere in the comedy world, Montreal Sketchfest starts tomorrow night, May 4th, and runs through May 13th. It's another case of FOMO for me, since some very funny people like Cam Wiley, Cheap Wine, Mom's Girls, Amanda Zeller, Bring Your Own Juice, John Hudson, Rails Comedy, Tita Collective, Anesti Donelis, Erica Gellert, Unstoppable Failure, and Joy Provision are performing at the festival. I named those ones specifically because you can go back into the archives and hear my chats with a bunch of those people. And what a coincidence, today's guest is also heading to Montreal Sketchfest. Funny how that works out. John Taylor, currently a member of Tri-Racial based out of Toronto, Ontario. John and the rest of Tri-Racial are heading to Montreal Sketchfest performing Friday, May 5th in the 10 p.m. slot at the Montreal Improv along with Sprink and Oink from Montreal and Cheap Wine from Toronto. Tickets and more information are available at MontrealSketchFest.com. John's first sketch is called Mr. Rogers, where a young man in the neighborhood comes to Mr. Rogers for some counsel. John reads the roles of Chad and Henrietta Pussycat. I read Mr. Rogers, Mr. McFeely, and Stacy, Chad's girlfriend, as well as give you all the visual information. So let's go to the sketch. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Won't you be mine? Won't you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Hello, neighbor. And thank you for spending another wonderful day with me. There's a knock on the door.
Mr. Rogers, Stacy left me. I need one of our special talks.
Oh, dear. Let's go see what this is about. Mr. Rogers gets up and opens the front door. Chad enters in an emotional panic.
Oh, man, she left me. She really did it.
Okay. Try to calm down.
I can't. I didn't know what to do, so I ram-punched my way all the way to your house.
Chad begins pacing quickly and throwing punches in the air. Sounds like someone's feelings monster is doing a big growl.
Oh, my feelings monster is going fucking nuts. I feel like Teen Wolf just before he comes. Teen Wolf, bro!
Chad, stop pace-punching.
I can't stop pace-punching, Mr. Rogers.
Come on, Chad. Let's take a seat on the couch and try not to say the fudge word. That's why you can't take part in arts and crafts time anymore.
Right. I'm sorry. Man, I really miss arts and crafts. Paper mache rule.
The two sit down. And you made a beautiful canary last time.
Oh, thanks. I hang it off my bench press.
So what happened this time? Did you punch a waiter out again for asking Stacy if she wanted another beverage?
No, it's just that...
Mr. McFeely enters. Oh, it's Mr. McFeely with a speedy delivery. Speedy delivery. Good day, Mr. Rogers. Chad. So I hear you're having a problem with Stacy again. You don't deserve her. So what happened this time? Did you call her an asshole when she was being friendly to another man in the neighborhood?
No.
Chad starts cry flexing.
Mm.
Chad. Remember what we talked about? It's okay to cry. You don't have to try and hide it by flexing.
I'm not crying. I'm just flexing my eye muscles, and that's making my eyes sweat.
Right. So, I have a piece of mail from Stacy regarding the incident. Mr. McFeely pulls out the paper. Dear Mr. Rogers, I assume Chad is at your place because he always ends up there when he storms out of the house flex crying. We were having a shitty evening watching cage fights. Then I told him the good news about my promotion, and he snapped and called me a big hairy asshole. Stacy should be with me. Speedy delivery. Mr. McFeely exits. Oh, Chad. Is that really why you're mad at Stacy?
No. Fudge, Mr. Rogers. You always know. She's making more money than me now. I might as well put on a skirt and start carrying a purse.
Is that how you really feel about Stacy? Just because she's making more money than you?
I don't know. I guess not. But how am I supposed to be an alpha male if my girl makes more money than me?
Chad gets up frazzled. Well, maybe we should ask one of our special friends from the land of make-believe. Sound effect of the land of make-believe as Henrietta Pussycat, the puppet, enters. Hello, Henrietta. What do you think about our situation here?
Meow, meow. Hello, Mr. Rogers. This is a tough meow situation, meow indeed. I think meow Chad should drop Stacy for meow meow, something a little more feline. Meow. We'll never get back together, Henrietta. Stacy's my girl. You're a prick, Chad.
Henrietta then exits.
Whatever, Henrietta. What do I do, Mr. Rogers? And I tried to apologize. Just like last week, I told her I love her as much as I love both legs.
Stacy enters.
Stacy!
Chad wipes away his single tear and then flexes his biceps.
Mm.
That's not what I'm looking for, Chad. Hey, Mr. Rogers, thanks for calming him down. Chad, you never ask about my feelings, and you're never considerate of me.
That's not true. I always crack open the window in the car when I fart.
Yeah, you sure know how to make a girl feel special. I want you to ask about my job or how my day was. If you really care about me, we should try doing the things I enjoy and not just watch cage fights.
Of course I care about you, Stacy. I love you. You're really kind to me and you help me flex through my feelings.
Well, then there you go. You need to spend more time focused on her and not getting jealous or threatened by her achievements.
You're right, Mr. Rogers. Stacy, I need you to support you just how you support me.
Stacy and Chad embrace.
Thanks, Mr. Rogers. I love our special talks. I wish I could be as happy and well-adjusted as you.
Oh, I'm miserable. Blackout.
My name is Samantha Russell. I'm a sketch comedian, and I have a prop and costume hoarding problem. So I figured the best way to get it under control is to start a podcast. On Should I Keep This? I chat with other comedians about their experiences in comedy and our insane prop and costume collections. And on each episode, we both bring a beloved item to discuss whether it's a treasure or just trash. Sometimes it turns out no matter how much money or time we spent on a prop, the only thing we should be holding on to are the memories we've made along the way. So check out Should I Keep This? We have new episodes every 2 weeks available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, John.
Hey.
All
Hey,
right, so
Josh.
tell me about this sketch. Tell me about Mr. Rogers.
So I wrote that it was the first sketch I ever wrote in Second City Writing Program.
Okay.
It's not, I couldn't find the original draft. The original draft was it was more just like a it, I wrote it as a therapy session for typical stereotypical like Chad type and Mr. Rogers was the essentially therapist in true Mr. Rogers form and yeah, it started out like that and yeah, I wish I had the original copy, but it was very much just two people sitting and just kind of talking. And I think I had like a lot of not like the a lot of those punchlines were still there, but I feel like without the like the entrances of like the other characters and kind of making it more dynamic, it would have been a bit of a snoozer. So yeah, I think our director at the time was Joel Buxton. So he helped me out quite a bit. And Viv as well. I remember Viv talking about just like I don't think he's a big Mr. Rogers guy, but he was like, well, I know there's other characters. And so I kind of took that note and then added that to it. And then yeah, I felt more confident in it, I'd say.
And even the idea of like Chet getting up to do what is it? It's pace punching. And then what else is
Pace
there?
punching, flexing, all the silly kind
Yeah.
of tropes of a
Like
Chad
just to
type.
give him more of a active, like, 'cause yeah, two people just sitting there having a therapy session is going to be boring.
Yeah.
You
That's the
have
interesting about
to.
sketch is you got to add a lot more, I feel, than just people talking.
So this was, you said this was written during your time at the Second City's training center.
Yeah, it would have been, I think, 2018, 2019, around, okay. Maybe 2018. Yeah.
All right, so we'll start there. What triggers in your head to take a class at Second City?
So for myself, I had always kind of been in the arts or arts adjacent. I was more of a musician kind of in my like teen years, early 20s. But I always like just really loved comedy. And like in high school, I did drama class for grade 9 and 10 and 11. And there, I think we did, I remember in grade 10, I kind of wrote our little class play. And then in grade 11, we actually did a bit of a sketch show. And it, like, I'm sure it wasn't that good, but like to me, it was like the coolest thing ever. Like, I loved it. So I was all in. But I still, at that point, I didn't know kind of the community. I didn't really know what sketch comedy was. Like, I knew Saturday Night Live was out, and I'm like, oh, this stuff's really cool. But yeah, I kind of leaned more into music, and was in bands, kind of bouncing around. To be honest, I'm just like, I'm pretty regular when it comes to musicianship and all that. I was just super passionate about it. Mm-hmm. Luckily found people better than me that would allow me to play with them. But yeah, then, you know, that kind of dried up a little bit. And my profession is teaching. So I'm a high school teacher. And originally I was in broadcasting. I'm giving you a super long one.
Go for it. Let's do it.
I'm talking about 15 years here. So originally, yeah, I started in broadcasting. And while I was in that profession, I was more kind of doing more jokey stuff, a lot of like rapping, a lot of music stuff, a lot of parody stuff. Everything I would write would be more of the comedy variety. And my instructors when I was in school at that time would tell me like, what, like, you know, you're not even, like, you should be in comedy. Like, this is what you care about. And even then, I still didn't really dive into it. So I stuck with broadcasting for a bit, and then I switched over to teaching. And then while I was teaching, I realized, hey, you know what? I can get my like dramatic arts teachable. So I did the training for that. And then I started teaching dramatic arts and kind of just fell in love with it, with the kids, just communicating with them on a different level. It was like,
yeah,
drama class is like just this different thing. So I loved it. And yeah, just kind of reaching the kids on a different level, learning more about them and their experiences really kind of moved me. And I was, you know, always arts adjacent, and I was always kind of doing stuff. So at that, I started doing more improv. So I did more improv for probably like 3-4 years, just kind of horsing around with it. Like, I don't know if you've heard of the Social Capital Theater in Toronto, but yeah. So I live kind of close to there. So for me, it was just a nice experience. I could go down there, a couple nights a week and go to a gym or, an improv class or whatever. And then I went through a few courses and I felt pretty confident in my improv skills. But I never really clicked like with a group or anything like that. I never really... like everybody I met, I had like nice relationships and stuff, but nothing really formed out of that.
Yeah. Okay.
So from that, I remember somebody just kind of mentioning to me like, oh, hey, you know, sounds like you might be interested in like what's happening at Second City with like writing. So I was always pretty passionate about that stuff. And I was always kind of writing kind of just for myself. I just like had fun like doing it alone. Never really thought of like collaborating and like, or it just seemed like a pipe dream. Like it just didn't, like in my world, there just wasn't people kind of doing that stuff. So yeah, kind of a long-winded, you know, bounced around doing that stuff and then got into Second City writing.
So you had done like the improv classes at SoCap. So when you do Second City, do you just go straight to the writing program or do you do improv there too?
No, I didn't do improv there. Okay. Again, Second City ain't cheap. I don't want to crap on Second City or anything, but yeah, you know, it's pricey. So I was like, okay, I've already done this at this place. This is something I was truly, truly passionate about, like sketch. Sketch to me was very similar to writing a song, where it's a few pages. You take a particular, point of view on something, and then you can tell a story.
You got to get your message out, and then you got to get your message out under 5 minutes.
And you gotta make it funny. So to me, that was like really interesting and really engaging. So yeah, I went there and yeah, I met Viv, first day. He was a guy that kind of stood out to me, and there were a few people there that kind of like stood out to me. Yeah, I was just hooked like right away. I just loved it, absolutely loved it. It was kind of one of those things where it's like you don't realize you needed it until you're there, kind of thing. And yeah, that's where I found like real community in terms of like people I still talk to this day and have collaborated with on several projects.
So, you mentioned with teaching, and I don't think I've ever thought about it this way. How different it must be to teach kids that are pat like to teach kids a subject that they're actually passionate about versus like having to teach them the general, math science. Like, I imagine it was more fun for a teacher to teach me about writing than it was to teach me about science, because I could give two craps about science, but like telling me about sentence structure and all that stuff like was actually engaging to me. So, and granted, that's why I liked my English teachers more than I liked my science teachers. So becoming a drama teacher, like, was that like, did that prod you to get more on stage for yourself and like get into the improv scene then?
Yeah, definitely. So I would consider myself a pretty shy person. Just kind of overall, like bigger crowds, I get a little more uncomfortable. Yeah, a bit more of a loner, like kind of doing my own thing. And then yeah, being forced in the my first dramatic arts teaching job was at kind of a more preppy all-girls school. So it was like, whoa, a world I'm not used to at all. I'm teaching dramatic arts, I've never taught it before. I like it, but I'm I don't know this group of society very well in terms of like my experience level, just with people from their life path or whatever. So that was like a truly like enriching experience for me, being in that environment where I'm uncomfortable and unfamiliar, but I have to just do it. And every day just pull up my socks and try my best. And sometimes, yeah, it may not go well. And I know they're shy and insecure, obviously, because you're like, grade 9, 10. And I'm the adult here and I feel that way. But I want to put out a good example to them. So I'm going to put myself out there so that that will help them put themselves out there. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. How so roughly, I mean, you mentioned that you probably did that class at the writing class at Second City, 2018, 2019. When did you start doing like the improv at SoCap?
Yeah, probably a couple years prior to that. So, yeah, I guess like 2015, 2016, probably.
Did SoCap not have like a sketch writing?
No, yeah, there's, I don't think there's, I still don't think there's anything like that there.
Interesting.
Yeah, maybe that's something I should nudge the boss on. That's something that we can make happen. I don't know. But yeah, it's more of an improv play, but I loved it, like that as well, just like the whole experience. Just being kind of like around other people that are just curious,
I forgot to ask earlier with, with regards of the sketch with Mr. Rogers, was this ever performed live?
Yeah, so it was performed live. The punch this version was performed live and it did pretty good. But it's funny thing, like looking at it now, I'm like, to me, I'm like, oh, this is like pretty vanilla. This is like right down the middle. Like I think it's a very again, I don't want to crap on Second City, but very Second City style. Just like, okay, we're not challenging anybody. This is all right. He's a goofy guy, and he's doesn't know how to work out through his feelings. Like to me, that's kind of like a very regular sketch, I feel.
Yeah. Not quite Route 1, but pretty close to Route 1, where accessible enough, everyone's going to get it. If you know Mr. Rogers, you already have the archetype. And you mentioned that like this wasn't the first draft, but like how... Oh wait, we already talked about that. Never mind. Cut that out. So how much of the curriculum through Second City did you go through with the writing? Like,
yeah, I went the whole way through. There was six courses, and then in 5 and 6, you're performing a show every week of new material. And I feel that's where I truly learned kind of writing sketch, because you get that immediate feedback. And that's what's so awesome about like performing sketch live, is that you get that immediate, you know, right away.
Yeah. If
hey, something works or it doesn't, or okay, wow, I need to change this, or you know, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I feel like I learned like a million things in that period of time, rather than the, you know, the 7 months prior where I'm just like writing sketches and like I don't know what's going on.
It's so wild to me of taking a class that is performing a new show every week. That's so daunting.
I loved it.
Especially when you have like, you still have real life responsibilities. Like, like it sounds like a lot. So like basically just like an hour show.
So we were like, it was 30 minutes
every
week. And there was another class that would do their 30 minutes as well. But yeah, there was, I think like 7 of us, maybe 8 of us, but we had, most of us had been together since the very beginning. And like, you know, we'd hang out afterwards and like, you know, just talk comedy, talk about our lives and all that jazz. And like, we just like really got tight with each other. And then by the time we were performing on stage, I think, yeah, it was definitely like a lot of trust between us. And like, I think that kind of stuff shows on stage when people like, you know, truly have like relationships with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think an audience can see that kind of stuff.
We're going to pause here and go back to the beginning. So what were you into growing up? What made you laugh? What would have been like your comedy influences?
Yeah, so I would say I got pretty lucky in terms of I had an older brother who was a little bit more mature beyond his years. And I was kind of like the complete opposite. I was like probably a little less mature than my years. But he kind of schooled me on all this stuff, like a young age, like probably like 10. I mean, even younger than, like, I remember, and my mom too. And my dad was hilarious. But my mom showed me, she was like, oh, Jim Carrey's hosting Saturday Night Live. And I was under 10, but I was having a sleepover that night with my two buddies, and I just remember it vividly, watching the episode with that, Jim Carrey,
that first episode where he hosts
the way he did the
monster.
Yeah, it's, that was my so first good. One, so you can imagine my like, first, like this is the first thing I've seen.
It's might not be my first one, but it's pretty close to for me too. Yeah, like but yeah, Jim Carrey on SNL, I think 96 ish
yeah,
monster.
So. Yeah, so like I can still remember sketches. It was the one Nettie Roxbury, like where he was there.
He joined, yep, the that one. Roxbury guys. There was the like, cheerleaders did a sketch.
Yeah, yeah. There was one where it was a lifeguard at
the hot tub.
At the hot tub. Oh yeah. My god, yeah. So all this stuff just like I just went insane over. Like I couldn't, like I was, this is real. Like what is all this stuff? But I was already like a Jim Carrey fan, and then I'm like, whoa, what? Again, I didn't know this was sketch or anything, but I was like, wow, I really like this stuff. And I guess it always just kind of stuck around. So I was a SNL fan growing up, but I would say the major impact for me was probably Chappelle's Show, because that hit me when I was in high school. And
Chappelle, yeah, like if you're talking about like watching that Jim Carrey SNL at 10 years old, Chappelle Show is definitely right at the right age
yeah,
for you. Because I think I'm pretty roughly like, sounds like we're pretty close in age. Like, well, yeah, like I think Chappelle happened for me like senior of high school, like first year of college. Like,
yeah,
where it definitely was like, oh, okay, this is big.
Yeah, I mean, what is this? Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the elephant in the room is, you know, Chappelle's views right now. I wouldn't say I don't support a lot of the stuff he's saying now. But at that time period, he was like touching on stuff that I felt I was experiencing. I in Toronto, it's, you know, very mixed culturally. Especially my high school was like super mixed, all people of all different, you know, walks of life, all kind of put together. And I had never seen, I mean, I like, we would all be kind of jovial with each other. Like, and then I saw it kind of professionally done, through Chappelle's show, and it just like kind of floored me. And I just never seen anything like it. And I thought it was, like really important. And I do understand why, like, you know, he pulled the plug on the show. And
yeah, he pulled the plug because you went to a very, you know, diverse school. I didn't necessarily do it. So, like, the idea of people laughing at his stuff for the wrong reasons, you know, all the stuff that he had trepidation about.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense to me. Like,
yeah, yeah. Because I, at the
with
time,
the people that was around me, like.
Okay. So, yeah, I didn't get it at the time. I didn't really, because my world wasn't really like that, in terms of, I don't know, segregated thinking and all that. I didn't really, you know, but I was like, I was moved by it, definitely, where I'm like, oh, wow. One, I really respected that because he felt, you know, his art was being kind of polluted. So that, I think that had a really big impact on me. I think I just kind of always carried that with me. I truly believe comedy is for everybody. And everybody has their own voice, and that's what's so cool about it. And I don't think you really have that in many other mediums, where especially sketch comedy, you can, you know, within 4 or 5 minutes, get a point of view across that maybe you've never seen before. And, you know, it might enlighten you. You might hear things. And, you know, I truly feel that people have their ears open when they're being humored or laughing. You can kind of those are teachable moments, I feel.
That spoonful of sugar kind of thing, where it's so much easier to get a point across, you know, when they're having a good time.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not a shame on you. It's a, hey, it's a fun thing, but it may even be subconscious, but you might be learning something.
A little bit like, hey, look at this dummy that we're doing here. Don't do this. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. So that really kind of, I'd say just really moved me. And I could really relate to a lot of the things I saw on that show. And then same with like Key and Peele. I think they did a good job as well, kind of touching on those types of subjects. I forget what the original question was, but would say that
what you were into growing up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So those things definitely kind of shaped me in my sense of humor, I would say, for sure.
You did talk about SNL and being a fan of that. So I ask everybody, I'm curious, who would be your favorite SNL cast member of all time?
Knee jerk would be Chris Farley. Sure. Mm-hmm. That whole, like, that group, I would, because again, that was when I like kind of just got into it and stuff. I was just a huge Chris Farley guy. I'd force my parents to go take me to any movie that he started. And, like, you know, sometimes they wouldn't get it, but I would just be dying. And, he just had a charisma that I feel, I just don't think I've seen it since then. Like particularly him.
I think there's a lot of people that like now end up doing, like, trying their hardest to be Chris Farley. Like,
yeah.
Like, he's become one of those archetypes in comedy that, you know, often imitate it, never duplicate it kind of thing.
Yeah, there's just like one, obviously the hilarious, like just his delivery and all that kind of stuff, but the unteachable stuff, like the vulnerability, you can see it. Even it's not, nothing's being said about it, but you can see it, and it's kind of like hard to describe. I just feel like it brought out emotions in me that it wasn't just laughter. It was like there was a bit more to it. I'm sure I definitely have more examples of that, but at that time, that for me, like Chris Farley was a big one. Yeah, that kind of like shook me to my core, I'd say.
I've said it before, and I fully believe it. If Chris Farley survived and got clean, he would have been an Oscar-winning actor by now. Like,
yeah, totally.
Don't know what role it would have been. Don't know what it, but he would have pivoted away from silly comedy, yeah. Almost like Jim Carrey did, like for a while.
Or John Candy. Candy's another one.
People would have been like, "Holy crap! What have you been doing for the last 10 years? Like, why haven't we seen this as much?"
Like, there's so much heart and sincerity. Like, yeah, it's just I think that's why, like, you know, a lot of comedic actors, when they go serious, they may add a new element to it because they're already connected to that kind of.
Yeah, like, I mean, even like a guy like Adam Sandler, as much as a lot of a lot of his comedy movies are like derided as being childish or whatever, he can switch that gear, and his dramatic stuff's fantastic. Like,
yeah, like unbelievable. Yeah,
where you don't understand how it's the same person sometimes.
Yeah. But I think, though, if you do have that comedic pulse, that you probably have, you know, you're in touch. I feel like you're in touch with your emotion. You should be, though. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't really be funny on stage, I feel, if you're not kind of thinking about your emotions and like have some sort of relationship with your own emotions.
You mentioned taking a break from, like, you know, dramatic stuff and going more into the music realm. Like, so what kind of music were you performing? What kind of bands were you in?
Rock music mostly. I was usually like the lead singer, rhythm guitarist. I'm not good at singing, but I would say if I am singing in an area where people are like watching it, they're not gonna like turn around and be like, "Ooh, the hell, that's awful," but they won't acknowledge it. It'll just be, "Oh, there's someone singing," like that's what I would say. My
there are words happening. It's but it's getting by.
It's there. So I went more the rock route, but I did a lot of like hip-hop. So I just love hip-hop music. I prefer rapping over like singing and that kind of stuff. I also just find like hip-hop is easier for telling a story, which works better for, I feel, like sketch comedy. And like, again, being a teacher, like, you know, I like putting together words and like, you know, certain syllables work together. So that part's kind of exciting for me. And I think that going through all of that gave me like kind of a I'm having a hard time figuring out the right wording, but like, I wanted to perform, but I wanted it to be something you haven't seen before. I guess when I got to comedy, like that was kind of what I've been trying to do. I don't know if it's like, I don't know if I'm striking that chord or if we're striking that chord as triracial, but that's kind of, I feel the end goal is like seeing something that people haven't seen before, or, you know, kind of like, cause I, you know, bring up the Chappelle show, like, if you look at that stuff now, it's outdated, like, but a new version of this with, you know, where our world is now, that's kind of, I think, what we're trying to do that people can connect to. And
So, okay, you mentioned that in your time of doing improv at SoCap that you would, you know, do jams and stuff, but you never really hooked on to a troupe or, you know, into a group for an extended period of time. And then you go to Second City and you meet Viv, you know, one third of Triracial, and, you know, take all the classes with basically, it seems like you took all the classes at Second City mostly with the same people, like you all just congregated and continued on for the most part. Mm-hmm. So what happens after the class system's over? Does this group try to stay together, or?
We did a couple things kind of like within that group, but I had always felt like going through the process, I afterwards really wanted to develop something with like a strong POV, like something that isn't just sketch. So after that, I remember the day I pitched it to Viv, where I was like, hey, yeah, I have this idea for like a 90s sitcom on stage, right, like high school yeah. kids, called, it ended up being School Around. So yeah, we like a few of us collaborated on that. And then that lasted for, I mean, we were ready to kind of like take it to the stage, and then the pandemic hit. So there was some pivoting there. And during that time, we were still like connecting and, you know, chatting and writing and all that. And through the pandemic, I wrote a short film based off of the School Around premise. Then we filmed that.
So Schooling Around, from what I understand, from what I've heard, is kind of like a parody of those 90s Saturday morning teen shows. Almost like, you know, a parody of like Saved by the Bell kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what I would say. It's like a parody slash that.
Although I say that, I don't even know if Saved by the Bell made it to Canada or whatever.
Oh, no.
All those teen sitcoms.
We got
Saved by the Bell. They all went up.
Yeah, so I kind of, that's like the original idea I got basically off of Saved by the Bell. And like originally it was like, yeah, let's do like a Canadian version of this. So like a little more tack, a little more Canadiana to it. And then as we were going through it, it didn't really, I don't think it came through so much in the short film, but in our stage show, it was kind of like, that's where the satire more kicked in, where it was like, obviously, you know, looking back at the 90s, there were certain tropes that, you know, we challenge now. We're like, hey, this wasn't, you know, cool or whatever. Or people are, you know, we're looking at the singularity of certain characters, and all that kind of stuff. So just kind of dissecting that within the stage show was something that we were like pretty passionate about and really enjoyed doing. So it was kind of like, yeah, it was a 90s parody slash satire where we have all the tropes of like a 90s, you know, kids show, but at the same time, it's kind of pointing out, you know, hey, you know, this is not cool. Like this what happened here? And this was odd. And yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Like it's so funny to me to think that like the Hollywood star comes to do a PSA and he's lighting a joint. Oh, no, like it's like heavy handed.
The tackiness.
And now, like, yeah. I'm sure kids in high school now are watching that, like, wait, what?
Yeah, it's almost like you're talking down to them.
Okay? Like, it's legal in so many places. Like,
yeah. There are certain things that don't age well. Character archetypes that we look at now is like, this is so kind of nonsensical and like not true to people's experiences.
So how was it, like, you're saying that there were a couple, you know, live stage versions of this and then shut down, pandemic. So what was it like to pivot to try to continue this work without being allowed to perform it live in front of people?
Yeah, it was tough. Yeah, definitely hard. I mean, I'm just really grateful that everybody I was around, like, that was into the project and still into it. So that was kind of amazing, having people that, again, aren't, you know, no one's getting rich off this stuff, but they're doing it because they like it. So I really appreciated that. I wrote the short film script, and it was, I think, like a day or two after it was you could have 20 people maximum in an outdoor space that we filmed the short film. And then it was almost like celebratory, just everybody back together. Just being excited to do something.
So
that experience was great. And then we came back and we had a couple really strong shows. And it was funny. So kind of segueing into what we're doing now is, I remember in the second show we did, one, it was like insanely hot August evening, and the air conditioner in the particular theater we were using wasn't working great. So it's insanely hot in the theater. It's a 2-hour show plus like with our openers and all that kind of stuff. People are sweating. The crowd isn't exactly like hyped up, understandably. And one joke at the beginning of our show was I introduce the two my two friend characters, because I'm like the Zach Morris type, and it's Derek and Viv, And they come in and they're a little bit late and they're like, hey, yeah, sorry, you know, we know how important it is to be here for our main friend. And then they just kind of break character, but they'll say like, hey, we're not white. And then we got a big laugh from the audience. So that was when I kind of registered like, oh, hey, this is something interesting here. The dynamic between the three of us coming from different walks of life. And that's kind of how a triracial idea kind of started from there.
So you and Viv go through the Second City. How does Derek enter the picture?
Yeah, funny story how that worked. So yeah, me and Viv, thick as thieves the whole time. And I met Derek, I guess, I want to say probably 2 years ago now.
Okay.
And he is very good friends with my partner's sister's fiance. So I knew he did stand up, and actually my partner's sister's fiance came to the filming of School and Around short film. Okay. And he just mentioned to me like, oh, my buddy, yeah, he's stand up, you know, he's all about it. I'm like, oh, cool, great. I didn't think much of it. And then I met him and I just kind of found him, you know, engaging and like good energy, really positive, which I like to surround myself around positive people. So yeah, we brought him in on the School and Around show because we just happened the guy who was playing the character that he ended up playing could no longer do it anymore. And then yeah, so it just kind of worked out freaky like that. I don't think triracial would have happened unless it was kind of natural and organic. So yeah, we just kind of all got along pretty well, and comedy kind of united us despite you know, coming from different walks of life, and that's where the creativity started.
So how far after that, you know, moment on stage with the three of you, do the three of you get together and be like, hey, let's circle up and start doing stuff together?
Yeah, so I think it was kind of immediate. I remember, and again, I don't know, like maybe Viv remembers things differently, but I remember after that, the particular show I just mentioned where that like joke kind of like got a laugh I wasn't expecting. I remember I was dropping Viv off after the show and we were just chatting about, hey, what's coming? Like, what do we want to do? You know, I think we should stay together. Like, you know, that was kind of our conversation. And I just mentioned like, I don't know, I got a feeling like me, you and Derek, like together, kind of an interesting concept. You know, we're three different races. I think we can really talk about this stuff. And he seemed like pretty in. And yeah, so it was literally the night of our last School and Around show where I kind of mentioned it, and then things kind of just kind of happened organically, I think, after that. That's yeah, I think that I feel like that's the only like real memory I have of it. And then it just kind of, it was so natural that like I can't even like figure out the switch.
How would you describe a triracial show for someone who's never seen one?
So I feel the show is I think it's kind of in your face. I think everything we do is true. I think that's the most important thing is, hey, some things may not land, and like you know, particular artists may not, you know, really be into certain things, but everything has to be true that we say, in terms of like race relationships and things like that. And so I feel like it's yeah, probably pretty in your face because there's just not much stuff talking about race in a humorous way these days. And yeah, kind of like a mix between highbrow and lowbrow, because I think some of the content we can do is pretty real. And then we sprinkle in, you know, a dick joke or, you know, something like that, you know, quick something just to like reset people like, oh yeah, we're at a comedy show, that kind of thing.
The quick dick and fart jokes are always
a little jump
good to sprinkle in every once in a while.
Yeah.
With your musical background, you know, playing in bands and stuff, has there ever been and maybe just because I haven't seen a show, maybe I'm just already wrong, do you have any desire of mixing music and comedy together?
Yeah, so I definitely do that stuff already. With the School and Around show, the character I played was like the Zach Morris type, and he was a white rapper before Eminem came out. So that was his whole thing, is like, I'm gonna be the best white rapper ever, better than Marky Mark, better than Snow, you know, all these like
I was waiting for you to say Snow.
Yeah, all these lame I was like, guys.
Come on, do it. Bring up the Canadian rapper, please.
Yeah. So that was the whole character, that he's kind of like a poser, like suburban kid kind of thing. And then from that in triracial, I've done a bit of rapping. We have one song where it's called White Boys, and it's a riff off of Bad Boys, from, yeah. So like if you're familiar with Cops, and that it's told from this, it's again has the whole, kind of energy of a rap song, but it's told from the perspective of, basically a racist cop. So like that's one in particular where there's a lot of bells and whistles to it, but everything in it is kind of true. So like in the song, like it gets a bit real where, you know, I'm frisking Derek. I'm turning down Viv on a loan based off of his name. So all this stuff is true, but there's, you know, a bit of a bow on it. So our hope is that people can watch it and, you know, enjoy it and that, but get a bit of a message from it. Yeah, that's our hope with that kind of stuff.
Whenever I talk to Canadians, since I'm slightly obsessed, is there a piece of Canadian pop culture that you would recommend an American hunt down? Something that I might not have heard of, or that, you know, like not Schitt's Creek or something that became big already, but like, is there something, you know, out of the blue that,
yeah,
like it could be comedy, it could be music, it could be anything Canadian, mm-hmm, to recommend.
Off the top of my head, and this may be too mainstream, but I don't know if you're familiar with the show Shoresy.
Shoresy is one of the greatest shows I've seen in the last 5 years.
Okay, yeah. All right, so you know what, so I'm
absolutely
talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah.
To me, that really speaks to me there. That is a like a true slice of Canadiana where there's, you know, people mixing together and interacting. And like, again, to me, that's what's truly interesting about, I guess, sketch in general, is that like stand up is like one person just kind of talking. Yeah. And I think the cool thing about sketch is that it's not one person talking, it's people interacting. So I feel like that's like that show kind of represents that stuff pretty well for me. Other than that, man, put me on the spot. I'm trying to think of more stuff that I'm into these days. I would just like, honestly, like just because Toronto Sketch Fest just happened, like when I saw the Best Of show, I was pretty moved emotionally just watching how vastly different the artists were. Don Valley Girls really, really made an impression on me. It was just it was sketch, but it was from voices that I don't get to see that often, and stories that I see with my students, but I don't necessarily see on TV.
Yeah.
So that really, really hit me. I would say the same with Big Chick Energy as well, where I've worked with those girls in the past, and just seeing kind of their theatrical nature just kind of graduating in this sense, like really, really stood out to me. And I went with my partner, and I could see her, you know, really enjoying it, and it felt really fresh seeing those two acts. I would also say, oh God, he's escaping me right now. Younger guy, one man show. Damn it. I can't remember
Adjonis? His name right now.
Yeah, Adjonis, yes, exactly. Yeah, so that was, again, being like a younger guy and just like hearing his voice was just like pretty inspirational to me. I was quite moved by it. So I would say, yeah, the stuff I'm inspired by is the stuff I'm seeing more in the community rather than kind of watching on TV.
Yeah. I mean, that's great, because I was going to add, like, because I think you said Toronto was your first festival experience for comedy.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. First one.
So
yeah.
Were you able, like, other, you mean, you mentioned the Best Of show, but like, were you able to like really soak in and like see things that you hadn't seen before, or
Yeah, I think that's what was kind of I think for me really good as a writer by seeing all this other stuff and these unique voices and how they deliver their messages as maybe different than mine. And it's kind of like a buffet. You're seeing all this stuff and like, hey, this can work for me. This idea of doing things this way. Wow, I haven't seen that before.
Yeah.
So all that stuff was, yeah, really eye-opening and just kind of, I think it definitely made me a stronger performer, just watching other people and, using their own unique voice.
Yeah, for sure. So as we're winding down here, ask the same two questions. Get a little deeper at the end. First off, what's something that you've learned in your time in sketch comedy that you would pass on to a new writer?
Something I've learned. I would really say to anybody kind of starting out or that is into it, like, take yourself seriously. You have your own unique voice, and it's interesting. Everyone comes from their own unique experiences, and like the world can see it. Like, let's all see it. Let's see what you're going through, what your life's been like. It's enlightening for all of us. So anybody starting out, I would really say surround yourself with people that you trust to kind of bear yourself to, and then receive advice from them based off of your own writing, kind of how to punch it up and all of that, and make sure they're people that you respect and respect you back, and that's where I feel the true magic comes from.
And then we talked a bit about it already, where, after time in music and then teaching dramatic arts, taking improv, and now getting your way into sketch comedy. So why has comedy become like a main part of how you spend your free time?
I gotta say, it's just the artistic expression I feel is just so important to myself. And being around other people that want to express themselves, I just think it's so cool and interesting. And I want to bring that out in other people, especially I feel like I learn a lot in the comedy community that I can bring to my students as well and help them find their own voices. And I guess if you just boil it down to a nub, it's like building each other up in terms of like self-esteem and whatever skin you're in, loving yourself and finding ways to maybe laugh at yourself a little bit, not take ourselves so seriously, I think is kind of for me what is so amazing about it for me is that, hey, listen, I'm gonna breathe out and I'm gonna think of something silly about myself, and that'll kind of put things into perspective, I feel.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Thanks, Josh. This is a real treat.
We talked about Schooling Around, which you can find on YouTube and embedded on the videos page of myfirstsketch.com. Triracial is heading to Montreal Sketchfest this weekend, performing Friday, May 5th in the 10 p.m. slot at Montreal Improv, along with Sprinkin' Oink from Montreal and Cheap Wine from Toronto. Tickets and more information are available at montrealsketchfest.com. Triracial also has a show at the Toronto Fringe Festival this July, and you can follow Triracial on Instagram at @tri_racial. The live and in-person Sketchy Beta returns this Sunday, May 7th at 2 p.m. at Tattooed Mom on South Street here in Philly. It's a sketch comedy open mic. Low stakes, low pressure, so bring your sketches and we'll do some readings. Sketchybeta.com for more information. My First Sketch is a Philly Sketchfest production. You can find out more information at phillysketchfest.com. Follow Philly Sketchfest on Instagram at Philly Sketchfest. The music on this episode is by the band No-No, which you can check out at nonoband.bandcamp.com. Like My First Sketch on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This is Josh Hyam. Thanks for listening. Go see some comedy.